Adventurers, this is Lizzie from the Westerverse. Welcome to my campaign diaries for the Guardians of Fahal. And today we're talking about episode 28, Who Will Be the Champion? As you know, last week's episode we talked about the Gauntlet and how they went there in disguise and then they entered into the fighting pits to try and use that as a cover to explore this event and see if they could find any more leads and concrete evidence of people from Una's village being in Feyen. So this episode basically covers the rest of the fights, how they shaked up and how the rules went, and we'll mostly be going over that today. First off, I love them all trash talking. It was a lot of fun, and especially hearing my husband, who tends to not trash talk. He really got into the role of the Hornet. He just threw some shade. And I think one of my favorite lines he kept saying was, "Hornets are not insects." And I have no idea if that's true. I believe him. If he kept saying it, I feel like it's true. Yeah, needless to say, it was good to have them do trash talking. And unfortunately, the way I had this set up is I had an Excel spreadsheet and I had mapped out how many competitors I would roughly need for to get to like a final one-on-one fight. So I kind of worked backwards. I'm like, okay, one-on-one and then two versus two and then double that. So like two matches of two versus two, four matches of two versus two, and then eight matches of two versus two. So I kind of like, you know, or anyway, I had a bracket set up. I couldn't map it out. And I had it all randomized. So anybody could get paired up with anybody because I felt like that added a lot of fun. So I did some surface level names for all the competitors. And then I did a little bit about like what their costume was. And then I winged it from there. And a lot of it I was inspired by WWE's Hall of Famers, but for the most part, it's not in the game. I think I might have cut it out of the episode. I don't quite remember, but I know that like outside of the game and in the game that night, I actually went through quite a few times like how the rules worked, and I think they all forgot, and then or maybe they were a bit confusing because I felt like I had them written down and they were super clear. And it was basically the first round was basically a straight D20 roll. And they either would add like their acrobatics or their athletics check if they were proficient in it. If not, they would just use their strength or dex modifier. And I knew all of them were basically designed to be evenly stat. So there was a lot of confusion about what they were supposed to be adding. And then the thing that I think got the most confusion initially is every round after that, I wanted them to have a chance to do something where they could get advantage, like it was a skill challenge. The problem was, though, is some of the things was either they could do something that would try to intimidate them, so the other person would be rolling for, like, fear or insight to see if they should actually be scared. So it's kind of like a roll-off game versus winning the crowd was more of like an actual like DC thing I'd set in my head. So it was kind of a little bit of a mess. I probably should have spent a bit of time mapping out what kind of skill roles could be used and what they should be paired against to make it a little less confusing. But we powered on. We powered on, and there was quite a few different fighting pit mechanics I saw online, and I think if they ever went back there, or if they did something like it, I would probably want to sit down and work out that advantage mechanic more for the crowd to get an advantage, like, because that was kind of, I think, one of the potentials for, like, the most fun flair, instead of just roll, okay, roll, roll, but, you know, like, anything. As a DM, I have my weak points, and definitely one of them is combat and the actual, like, mechanics of the game. And what I mean by the mechanics of the game, like, I can read the rules of the book and understand the basics of how something works. But then, like, in terms of understanding how it fits into the ecosystem of the other rules and, like, how it might, if you tweak with something like that and then don't have a counter check balance, it could get a little screwy. But anyway, I'm much more comfortable with the narrative moments, not the mechanic ones, but I'm working on it. I feel like it was so, I think Josh was a little stressed getting put up against one of the showrunners, and that was unfortunately just the roll of the dice against him. But it worked out, because, like, they actually were statted pretty close together in abilities, and he just rolled really good, and he knocked out the Viper in the, the second round. So, it was quite funny, though, because with him winning, it was just such an upset. So a lot of people bet on him, got, like, a shit ton of money. And I just love the narrative of the newcomer coming in and destroying the champion. I had Lauren, she was lurking around in Discord listening in and sending messages of who she was betting on. And I think she won, like, 20 silver off of it. So, you know, it was pretty good for her. Same. I was like, Una won, too, because she bet money. And Steve got to be Jim Ross, which was top tier. So for those of you who didn't grow up watching WWE like me, I was told by my friends and then watched via YouTube that Jim Ross was one of the announcers for WWE. And he had a lot of iconic lines of like, oh, my God, that man is broken in half. And he just was like, he just was the king of saying things to kind of add to the theatricality of it, like hype it up and also make it seem like whatever the person just did in the ring was much more intense or whatever. Unlike WWE, though, these fights are not staged. They're just happening. So the owner of the gauntlet as Jim Ross is quite something. I kind of cut a little bit of periods where we laughed extra long because it was just going on for too long and I didn't want to slow down the episode. And it was a good time. It was a fun thing to have to edit around of just being like, okay, this laugh has been going on for 2 minutes. I probably should cut it down a little bit. But it was a good time. It was a fun cameo for Steve. Also with him just taking out the champion, like the nobles are starting to take notice. Oh, what's that about, you know? They're entertained. One in particular standed, and I specifically did that because everyone who is a noble in the box, and I know this comes up in the next episode, I had their personalities mapped out. So I was kind of like, I think one of them would be super excited by the upset because he's just kind of like somebody who enjoys like surprises and changes. And I was like, okay, I wanted to at least have one of them like actually be like, oh my God, that was good. So it's a good time. Good time. And then also the interview man. Yes, there used to be a guy who did all the interviews for WWE, is Mean Gene. And he was just a guy in like a tux suit and he'd always go interview the fighters and like ask them like about the match or upcoming things, and he would always have to play it really straight. And I don't know if anyone's ever seen it because I think it's kind of infamous. Like, I had seen this outside of WWE rabbit hole I fell down for this not just because my friends have really liked WWE and grew up with it. I'd seen it on a YouTube compilation, I think a long time ago, of like craziest interviews. And it's like Macho Man Randy Savage talking to Mean Gene, and he's got like a coffee creamer and he's talking about how he's gonna rise to the top. He's cream of the crop. You can find it on YouTube. It's kind of amazing what being on cocaine does to you. Like, no, I don't know if Macho Man Randy Savage was on cocaine at that time, but according to my friends who are fans, it is likely. But anyway, it was great because Josh gave this amazing trash-talking interview, and then, like, in the next match, he just gets punched out. I felt bad. I mean, he did go all the way, though, and for 5 rounds of that. And so he did good. He did good. But we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that. So the next big thing that came up was Andrew's character fought a female, Andrew's character fought the owl, which was a woman fighter, who did a flyby attack. I definitely made her more Dexy, and it was super funny when I came up with this character. I didn't think Andrew would get rolled up to fight her, but I was so happy when he did, because in, it's an inside joke, but, like, she yells hootie hoo as part of her attack. And that is because in an old game we were in, Andrew had a familiar as a ranger, very similar to how Una has Reul. He took Find Familiar and he got an owl and he named it hootie hoo. It was a celestial owl and Josh gave it like a British accent. And I didn't give her a British accent, but it's kind of a funny inside joke for us. So if you're wondering like, why did she yell hootie hoo? Like, I don't get it. That's why. It was from our other game. But anyway, he had a woman fighter. And, you know, she did really well. Other than I kept kind of forgetting that, like, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't do the social advantage thing. Because I wanted it to be, like, how some DMs are really good at narrating what the opponent does in combat. So even though you're still rolling and using the mechanics, you're saying things that make the fight seem more real. Like they went in for an uppercut. They try to sweep the leg. They did this. And I was trying to do that, but then I forgot that I was using that as her social initiative to try to get advantage versus what her actual attack was. So that was a little confusing. I don't know if there's a better way to do that in the future, or if my brain was just fried. It's hard to say. but needless to say, Andrew does defeat her, and Steve makes a callback to Song and Birds Belong in the Pan, which I think he just did for his own amusement, and everyone was like, wait a minute, there's a connection, and in my head, there never existed a connection between this man's grandmother and him, and I don't think there could be, because they're so far north of where Song lived, but, you know, maybe by plot of convenience, I don't know. It was a throwaway joke either way. This is me saying as a DM that canonically, this man's grandmother, who used to say birds belong in the pan, is not the old lady from the orphanage that abused Song. But I might have to make her because the players might want to, like, go along that route. But they haven't yet, so we'll see. It's just kind of crazy. It's also partway during this event that Una remembers what they were doing there and is like, I am looking for the Selkies. And I'm glad she said something because I had gotten super distracted. But I also hoped they would get distracted a little bit too. I wanted to just jerk them around a little bit and see if they remembered to look. So she obviously does. Obviously down in the green room, both Rowan and Hans and Franz saw Lou, who is clearly his character's for this performance is the shark. That's his fighting name. They saw him, or who they think is him, but it's probably him because like he has all the signifiers of being from Una's village, like clothing style, hairstyle choice, the large brown eyes. But yeah, so the one that I was more excited for them to see was the other three lurking around, and they saw Para sneak off somewhere. Well, they assume it's Para. But it was Para, and she specifically was masked for reasons, and it's because she's very unique looking, and she had to go talk to somebody privately, so it's like, don't be seen as doing that a little bit, like, you know, don't make it so obvious. And then basically Sienna and Ulan are hanging out, and they're waiting to watch Lou fight and everything like that, and hanging out, and I love that she picked up on the fact that Ulan is a sad man. He does not look like he's doing well. He looks like, I don't know how to explain it other than, it's the look of somebody who has made a lot of bad life decisions to get them in a situation that they thought they wanted, and they've done some pretty terrible things, and they wanted to do those terrible things, and they reveled in it at times, but now they're having a change of heart. And they think they're too deep in it and they can't get out. So they're just slowly destroying themselves on the inside because they don't think there's like a coming back from it. That is definitely where Ulan is right now. Where he's going along for it, but it's almost like he just feels like his ship is sinking and he has to stay on the boat. Like he doesn't see like any point of escape. And he doesn't really think that Well, I guess there could be more. That's probably more spoilery things. But, you know, it's definitely a very specific type of look. And for Una, that was a very... I think at first she was a little bit like, oh, well, he chose to be here. But then I think the sadness and how he looked, like the regret, was so evident that she's like, wait a minute. I need to think about this a little bit more. So I was happy that Megan picked up on that. I like having my villains, some of them be a little bit morally complex. And, you know, I'm personally a bit of a sucker for redemption arcs, but I feel like a lot of times they're done either with a character that really didn't do anything bad, or it's not really earned. It's just like, oh, I'm sorry. And then I guess I'm just forgiven for every terrible thing I've done, and I have to do no work to change the way I've thought and acted over the last so many years. Anyway, we'll go more into Ulan's psychology and motivations in later episodes, but especially next time, because that's when their conversation specifically happens. So, Rowan versus the Pedigree. I found a bunch of pictures of wrestlers from WWE online where, like, they were basically very well-dressed and kind of, like, I don't want to say pretty boys, but they carried themselves like they were and, like, very poshy. So I really liked the idea of having one of these fighters in here. And it was fun having it, go up against Rowan, who can't say anything. And I knew that technically out of everybody that Aaron's character probably had the most advantage going into these fights because he could use his rages. So he could always have a guaranteed advantage without having to try to win a skill check. But I have a side note on here of how Steve introduced him, which was a man who has more clothes on his body than words in his mouth. I think I need to go through this episode and just make like a supercut of every line of Steve introducing a fighter or like talking about when they get beat up. I think the only thing that I would have had Steve do different, and he didn't want to interrupt too much, was I kind of wish he would have made commentary like also as it was happening, but I'm sure it was hard for him because he wasn't sure the exact cue moments of like, should he say something? Like, and having to improv that is a little bit hard. But Rowan getting put up against this boy is fun. I love Sam just being like, come on, brother, get him. In snake form, she's got to stand her bro. He's got to beat him. And fortunately, he did. So that meant that he went to the next round. And then they all had set. I rolled again to see who they would get paired up against. None of them paired up against each other. And they did their roll-offs and managed to successfully... Two of them made it to the final four. Poor Josh. What I wanted to do originally for the second round and the third round, if they had gotten matched up against each other, was maybe like do three rolls instead of five. But they decided, they're like, no, we still want five. So I was like, well, I guess it doesn't really, just makes them a little bit longer. It has a chance to drag it out longer. So that's okay. I just didn't want the fighting to drag on for too long. But anyway, yeah, it's set up for Rowan and Hans and Franz Andrew's character fighting each other. And that was quite entertaining. The two of them enjoyed that so much. There was so much joy on their faces where I'm almost like, I'm actually surprised Rowan doesn't like practice with them more, like go out and practice fighting, because like there's tiny hits of like rage coming out. And it was kind of hilarious. I don't know. I think I need more scenes of Hans and Franz teaching Rowan how to get angry like that again and release some of that, because they have, and also just watching like Aaron and Andrew, like their grins on their faces and like their like excitement to like actually fight each other was great. Is great. And by this point of the game, everyone's starting to throw money into the ring, like, you know, because it's the final four, so everyone got a little bit of money. The amazing surprise, I didn't know if it would happen. I was prepared for it not to happen. And I figured that if none of them made it, then it would just be like the Viper versus whoever he rolled up against, and they could watch the fight and try to tail him afterwards, or they could like try and interact with the other Selkies in the ring. So like I was prepared for one of them not to get paired up against Lou. You know, I was fine with that. I that was always an option in my head. But the fact that one of them got to go up against him was pretty exciting, tension-wise for the game. And, you know, those kind of moments are just great when they can happen organically in the game. And it also was fun because then it meant I got to have more, like, one-on-one interaction with them. And they could kind of learn about what kind of fighter, what kind of antagonist he actually was and what some of his abilities would be. I got to kind of showcase that he was a barbarian, and stuff like that. I think I hinted at his class a little bit by his eyes, but he didn't use any of his, subclass abilities. But they had a little bit of trash talking before the fight, and Lou definitely is the guy who plays it just too serious, where you're like, I hope this is supposed to be your character performance and not real, but it is real because Lou's an awful person. But before that fight happens, something else happened chronologically first. That was Sienna went down in the ring to give like Lou a good luck kiss and stuff, you know, she'd be in a supportive girlfriend. And it's part of the show for her. She's like, yeah, I add to the show, you know, people see that he's got a significant other and he's mysterious and multifaceted, you know. But anyway, because that happened, Una took a gamble and was like, I'm gonna approach Kulin. And the fact that she did, like, I mean, she didn't have to do it seductively like the way she did, but she did, like, she went for it. Like, that is a full come follow me so we can shag behind the bleachers, or come follow me so we can make out behind the stands move, or I want to come flirt with you somewhere private. And, you know, like, okay, this is one of those things, like, women and, I don't want to say just women, but, like, there are certain types of people in society who can get away with doing this and it doesn't come off as creepy. Like, if I was at a bar, like, regardless, even if I was at a bar and I was single and a guy did this to me, I would be like, oh God, like, no, I'm not following you. I'm going to get murdered. If a woman did this to me, or, you know, somebody who presented a lot more like feminine, I would probably be more, willing to go for it. This is kind of one of those weird dynamic things where I think if a guy did this, it probably wouldn't have worked as well, but just the circumstances, like, Ulan managed to be persuaded to at least follow her to go talk. And then that led to some very interesting conversations. And we'll get to that next campaign diary. Anyway, back to the fight against the Paladin and the Barbarian, round two, Electric Boogaloo. I don't really have tons to say other than it was a very tense fight. Not tense for me. Like, it was tense for me, but not because I was, like, afraid I was going to kill Andrew's character. It was tense because I wanted Lou to come off as, like, you know, intimidating. And technically, he was statted out higher than Andrew's character was to win by just, like, a point or two. But the rolls of the dice, man. Which just goes to show you can maximize your build all you want, and sometimes just the dice will not be on your side. But needless to say, it was an amazing final fight. It came down exactly to the last roll and led to a knockout. It was great. It was great. Steve's closing lines were amazing for it. Everybody was so excited. Andrew was shocked. I had forgotten to mention, this was a fuck up on my part, I had forgotten to mention there was prizes for getting to certain stages. And honestly, you probably wouldn't make your money back if you probably wouldn't go make any money back on the first round, like, if you went out during the first round. But, like, the second, third, and fourth round, you can definitely make money. So, it was a good time. They won a bunch of money. And then it was also one of those things that I didn't really, I knew it was a possibility, and I, okay, so above table, I had thought, in addition to watching for the Selkies, Una and Nora might have tried spying on the Nobles box a little bit, just because, you know, to see if Rice was in there, because they hate him, rightfully so. But they didn't. So I was like, oh, I had written up all these descriptions of which nobles were in the box and stuff like that. But it kind of came in handy because I needed them for Lauren's character because she was watching the nobles box specifically, trying to like figure out what they were talking about. So I got to use it for her. But it was super fun when one of them won and it was like an upset thing and it was a surprise because the nobles wanted to talk to this guy and because he did some weird things where they're like, I want to talk to this guy and see what he's about. So that was a great place to end on. And then also having the unresolved thing of like what happened between Una and Ulan's conversation. It was a very crazy cliffhanger. So I think that's a good place to stop for today. Thank you guys for listening. If you like this podcast, please give us a like and share on social media or review us on your favorite podcasting platform. It would mean a lot to us. Next time we're going to be talking about the conversation between Ulan and Una and Hans and Franz talking to the nobles and Rowan overhearing shit from Lou. Oh my god, so much is happening. Okay, have a good one, adventurers.